It's Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden era. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Livonier. We have crime stories in this hour. Later on, we hear the tale For Old Time's Sake on Suspense. But right now, it's the CBS Radio Workshop. From March 16, 1956 on CBS, we hear the story Cops and Robbers.
The CBS Radio Workshop, radio's distinguished series dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
Transcribed.
Cops and Robbers is a game played by children, and it's a game actors play on the radio for a living. Tonight, the actors, as usual, will be playing make-believe robbers, but the cops will be real. The CBS Radio Workshop presents Cops and Robbers.
My name is Stanley Ness. I'm a writer, mostly of crime, criminals, and what police do about them. For a long time, I've wondered what real detectives would do when confronted with a fictitious crime. And tonight, the CBS Radio Workshop is giving me a chance to find out. First, so you, the actors, and I can start off knowing what the detectives will try to find out, I've written a short dramatic sketch which we've recorded while our detectives, all retired members of the police department, City of New York, are across the street having coffee. The scene, a one-room flat on the Upper East Side of New York.
Who is it?
It's me, Dunk.
Well, come on in. It's open.
It's not open.
Oh, honest goodness.
Hiya, baby.
Be careful. My fingernails are wet.
Oh.
Well, where is it?
Where's what?
The chow mein. You were going to stop at the Chinese restaurant and bring back chow mein. Where you been?
Oh, yeah, I was. I forgot.
God, how could you forget what you went out for?
Ellie, baby, listen. You got to stand by me. I'm in a jam.
You went out to get chow mein. How could you get in a jam?
I did. That's all there is to it.
What kind of a jam?
I can't tell you right now.
You expect me to stand by and you can't tell me? Why don't you get the chow mein?
Forget about the chow mein, will you? Listen, you got the telephone number that Bar and Grill where Joe hangs out at Glenham's?
What's Joe got to do with it?
Have you got the telephone number?
Yeah, I got it. It's in the drawer there. One of their cards.
I'll get it for me, will you, baby?
Get it yourself. My fingernails are all wet. What's this all about, anyway?
I'll tell you later. Well, where is it, anyway?
It's there. Look. Then look, now tear apart.
Oh, here it is. Look, I got to go out in the hall and phone him.
Dunk?
Yeah?
Oh, will you sit down and relax and tell me what this is all about?
I don't have to sit down. I can tell you standing up. I shot a guy.
You what?
I shot a guy.
You went out to get a container of chow mein. How could you shoot a guy?
I don't know how I could, but I did.
So we know what our detectives will try to find out. The crime referred to was of such a serious nature that the precinct detective squad commander was called from his home to supervise the investigation. Our squad commander tonight is Lieutenant Dan Campion, who retired from the police department a little over a year ago after 25 years in the job. The detectives working under him will be Howard C. Clancy, Jerry Heaney, and Richard Jacobson. Approximately an hour and 10 minutes after the crime occurs, Detective Jacobson, who is carrying the squeal, which means it is his case, has returned to the station house and is typing up a report on the progress of the investigation so far. Remember, the detectives have no script. They are playing themselves, doing a job just like they've done every day.
What's up, Jake?
Oh, hello, Lieutenant. We had a tough stick-up in the precinct tonight.
Oh, another one?
Yeah, a liquor store over on 72nd Street.
What time did it happen, Jake?
Oh, about 9:50. It's that Fairland liquor store over on 288 East 72nd. Yeah. And a fellow stuck a gun into the clerk who was in front of the store, and the owner was in back doing a little bookkeeping when he stepped out. He had a pistol.
Has he got a permit for it?
Oh, yes, he had that. We checked on that. But anyway, poor fellow got shot.
Is he seriously hurt?
Oh, yes.
He's alive yet, though.
Oh, yes. He's over at Metropolitan Hospital. He fired a shot at the stick-up man. Stick-up man fired two at him and hit him. And he went down.
Where was he shot, Dick?
Under the chin it hit him. Deflected into his jaw, just below his lips.
Oh. Anything else to it?
He got a little more than $800. He grabbed a money in a paper bag
and ran out the front door in the street.
Anybody see him? Any good identifications
on
him?
Well, yeah, pretty fair identification. The fellow had a car. We found it out later. He ran around the corner of 3rd Avenue. He hit some old woman, knocked her down.
Anybody see him?
There was a sanitation man trying to help the old woman up. But he saw this fellow continue to run. He went around 3rd Avenue and looked him over, and he was getting into a car and got away.
You got the sanitation man's name and all
yes,
like
that?
Yes,
we have
good.
That.
Good.
But on the back of his car, he had some of that red tape, that fluorescent tape they're using.
Oh, yes.
And that was all over the back bumper. And he got the last three numbers of the plate.
Okay.
I sent out an alarm for the car over the teletype with the three numbers, and all the boys in the neighboring precincts have been notified.
Now, Lieutenant Campion and Sergeant Klein on TS just rang upstairs, and he says Dowd over on Post 11 thinks he's got that car spotted that was
on
that stick-up and
fine.
Shooting. It's over there at 2nd Avenue, 77th Street. It's a two-door Plymouth sedan. It's 3T152.
Oh, we got the full license, though.
Yeah, and I verified it, and it's registered under a Joseph E. McCondy. It's 761 East 76th Street. Hey, what? Clancy, could you check lost property on that?
Okay.
Yeah, see if you can get the description of the car and get the owner's name and address.
Yeah, Dowd is guarding the car over there. He's not letting anybody go near it.
Say,
sure.
Jake.
Okay.
You go over with Howie after he makes that call and see if we can get that owner in here and we'll talk to him.
Very good. We'll do that.
Okay, get right on it.
Now we see the detectives are off on the right track. But what about the characters played by our actors? Let's get back to them. The following scene was written, rehearsed, and recorded in advance. And, of course, Lieutenant Campion and his men are unaware of what is going on in the scene, just as they would be in the job.
All right, Joe. I'm coming. Hello, Joe.
Telling you, Dunk, you got a friend in me. That was the best fight all season, and I got to miss the finish.
I appreciate it, Joe.
Hello, Ellie.
Hi.
Well, what's the big jam you're in? You sure it's not the car?
No, it's not the car.
It only should be.
Where's the keys?
Here. Here you are, Joe. Hmm.
Where'd you leave the car?
In the same place, right where you always leave it.
All right. Now, what's this big jam you're in?
He went out to get some chow mein to bring back.
Let me tell it, will you?
Well, who's stopping you?
I went out and I started to the Chinese restaurant, all right. But then I figured it's Friday. It's going to be a long weekend, and I don't have much money in my pocket.
So?
So I figured I ought to do a little work. Then I ran into you on the corner, and I said, Joe, can I borrow your car? You said, sure, why not, if you fill it up with gas? So you gave me the keys, and that was that.
Not yet, that wasn't that.
You let me tell it my own way.
So I lent you the car?
Yeah, that's right. And I drove around scouting for a good place to make. I parked it on 72nd Street where I could get away easy. I walked around the corner, and there was this liquor store just right for picking.
Using my car for the get?
It was all perfectly simple, Joe.
Wait, there's more to come.
What's to come, Dunk?
Well, it was a good touch, and I cleaned out the register, and I'm heading for the door, and all of a sudden, another clerk comes out from the back with a gun.
Uh-oh.
So what could I do? I blast away. He drops, and I take out around the corner for the car. To make a long story short, I'm in a car and I'm away.
Is the guy dead?
He didn't wait around to find out.
My car you gotta borrow to go heist the joint and shoot up a guy. That's a fine thing.
I'm sure I got away okay. I don't think anybody made the license number. There were some people looking at me as I came around the corner, but I don't think they made the number on the car.
Well, supposing somebody did.
That's what I want to talk to you about, Joe. Look, if by any chance somebody did and the cops come talking to you, don't tell them you lent me the car.
What do you mean, don't tell him I lent you the car? What am I going to tell him?
Well, you know what to say, Joe. You'll think of something. There ain't a chance in a thousand anybody made the car, but I just want to cover every step of ground.
Look, I'm an innocent bystander. I was in a bar and grill watching a fight. You didn't tell me what you were going to do. Why should I cover for you?
Joe, I've known you a long time. A friend in need is a friend indeed.
Oh, tell me something, Dunk.
Huh? What?
How much did you get out of the liquor store?
Money, you mean?
Yeah, money.
Over 500.
How much over 500?
$812.
Well, that wasn't bad.
Was it worth shooting a man for?
Joe, you gotta help me. I help you plenty.
Give me 400.
What do you mean, give you 400?
You want me to help you, don't you?
But that's half.
It ain't half. You got 812. All I'm asking is 400.
But there's not a chance in a thousand. There'll be a kickback.
All right, then what are you worried about? Now, let's forget the whole thing. I'll go home and go to sleep, and if the cops talk to me, all I can tell them is the truth.
Well, you got me in a box, Joe.
What's your box?
Give him the 400, Dunk. What are you taking chances?
Well, what are you going to tell them if they talk to you?
I don't know yet. I'll think of something.
Yeah, but what?
Well, you give me a chance. The deal was just sprung on me. I got to work it out.
All right, Joe. You cover me now. Don't forget.
Yeah, I'll cover you if they talk to me.
Thanks, Joe. I knew I could count on you.
Boy, this is a load off my mind. What a relief.
Now that it's such a relief, please go down and get the chow mein.
Now, with sufficient information on which to act, Lieutenant Campion has instructed his men on their next step in the investigation. Detectives Clancy and Jacobson, for instance, go to 761 East 76th Street, the address listed for Joseph P. McCondy, in whose name the car is registered. Remember, from now on, there is no script. The actors are on their own. So are the detectives. Let's see what happens.
Hey, Mike. McCondy.
Mike? Is there something I could do for you, gentlemen?
What's your name, Chief?
Joseph P. McCondy.
Sir. We're detectives. Oh, do you own an automobile?
Yes, I do.
What kind of a car do you have?
I have a 1950 Plymouth, two-door.
Did you have a little accident tonight with it?
No, sir.
Do you have a license?
Yes, sir, I have it right here.
Can you see it?
Sure. Is there something wrong, gentlemen?
Well,
you
were just
had a little accident tonight, I'm sure, someplace, didn't you?
No, sir.
You sure of that?
Absolutely.
You loaned the car to anybody?
No, sir.
Where is the car now?
Well, I left it on 2nd Avenue between 77th and 78th Street.
What did you leave it around there for?
Well, I was at a bar all night. I was watching the fights.
Anybody with you?
No, sir. Well, in the bar, I've a couple of boys I see every once in a while in there.
What's some of their names? Give me one name.
Well, there was, I'd give you a couple. It was Bud and Tommy.
Uh-huh. But Dylan bought a Tommy a car tonight,
No. We were all there.
I'd like to talk to you.
Oh, hold on.
You don't mind, do you?
No, sure.
Do you have anything on you before you leave?
No, sir. Absolutely not.
You're sure of that?
I'm clean.
Ever been arrested?
No, I've never been arrested.
You sure of that?
Absolutely.
Look, anything that you say, we're going to check. Don't forget that.
Right, sir.
So you might just as well tell us the truth right now.
Yeah, I've never been arrested.
You've never been arrested?
Oh, I've been down at the house a couple
of
times.
Okay, let's go.
Okay.
With Joe McCondy in custody, the detectives return to the station house. They walk them upstairs to the squad room and into Lieutenant Campion's office.
Lieutenant, this is McCondy. Fellow on that car?
Oh, hello, Mr. McCondy.
How do you do, sir?
Sit down there
a minute.
Yes, thank you.
Can I see you outside a minute, Lieutenant?
Yeah, you stay in here with him, Howie.
Yeah,
I'll be right back, Mr. McCondy. We have some other business to take care of.
Could I smoke in here, sir, all right?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, but don't throw the butts on the floor.
Oh, no, I wouldn't do that.
You want any coffee?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind a little
okay,
black.
Stand up.
Yeah, sure.
Everything you have in your pockets, take them out and put it on the desk here.
All
everything,
right.
No matter what it is.
Okay.
If it's money, count it.
All right.
In front of me.
Yeah. This is embarrassing, because I'm not too well healed. I only got $5, $10, $11, $12, $13.
$13, okay. Put it back.
Okay.
Okay, you have cards or
I have a wallet
here,
Howie.
Okay.
Yeah, let's look at that, will you?
All right.
My wallet, there's not a wallet I got to keep.
Who do you live with at this address?
Nobody.
I see, all right. What do you work at, Mr. McCondy?
Well, I kind of dapple in sports, equestrian.
What do you mean, dapple?
Well, you know, I hang around the racetracks a little bit.
You bookmaker?
Well, a little bit.
You take numbers?
No, I don't take no numbers.
You ever fingerprinted for anything?
No, I was never fingerprinted.
Never fingerprinted?
No.
Because we're going to fingerprint you.
Well, that's all right. It's your privilege, I guess.
Excuse me a minute.
Spot tonight. Lieutenant, he was in the spot up on the avenue tonight.
Yeah, we'll come to that. Fine. Say, Jerry, check the BCI on this fellow's name and address, and you got a pretty good description of him.
Okay.
And then I want you to check the Information Bureau and see if he's been... Do you ever get a summons for anything?
No.
Never had a summons in your life?
No. Yeah. Oh, you mean a parking summons and something like that? Well, I got a ticket for speeding there once or twice.
How long ago was
summons,
that?
Isn't it?
Yeah,
why don't you answer the question?
Well, I call those tickets, you know.
You were convicted
summons.
Then.
That's polite.
Is that right? You were fined?
Yeah, I was fined.
Well, that's a conviction.
Now, where were you at 9:20?
I was at Glenham's Bar and Grill on 2nd Avenue between about 75th and 76th Street. I got there about 9 o'clock. I had some... real rotten chow there, and then had a few beers with Spud and Tommy, what I told you about. And we were chewing the rag there for about an hour. The fight went on at about 10 o'clock. And we made a couple of bets, me and Spud and Tommy, and...
You didn't leave the premises between 9 and 10 o'clock?
No.
Did you see the whole fight?
Yeah, I went 10 rounds.
Who won the fight?
I'm Merrill. I won.
What odds did you get?
2-1. I gave the odds.
Oh, you gave the odds, huh? What did you get on that, Jerry? Anything?
Hey, McCondy, what are you handing out here? You did a bit in 1952 for petit larceny.
What kind of a petit larceny was it?
You went to the island for it.
Oh.
What kind of a petty larceny was that? Was that grand larceny and reduced to petty larceny? You took a plea on it, didn't you?
Yes.
It was grand larceny then, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, I don't know the technical words for these things.
Oh, you know just as much about it as we do.
Well,
you arrest.
You know more law about that.
Now, hold it, fellas. Listen, who used your car tonight? We haven't got all night. There's a man dying.
I told you when we picked you up at your house that we were going to verify everything that you told us. Remember me saying that?
Yeah, I know that.
Listen, Mac, why don't you stop kidding? We're bringing the bartender over here. And
you could bring him in.
Well, he's coming in.
That's okay with me.
Howie, take this guy over and fingerprint him and let him think this thing over. And if he don't come up with something different, boy, you're in.
It's after 1 a.m. A detective has gone to Glenham's Bar and Grill on 2nd Avenue to get the bartender Whitey. He brings him into Lieutenant Campion's office.
Hi, Luke.
Hello.
This is Harry White, and they call him Whitey. He's the bartender. This is Lieutenant Campion in charge of the squad here.
Hello, Whitey. How are you?
Lieutenant.
This is Detective Heaney and Detective Jacobson.
Hi, Whitey. How are you doing?
How long have you been in our precinct, Whitey?
Oh, I've been working a joint up there about 8 years now.
8 years, huh?
Yeah. All right, if I sit down?
Go ahead. Sit down.
You can smoke. Do what you want. You know Joe McCondy, Whitey?
Yeah, I know Joe a long time.
You see him tonight?
Yeah. He was in tonight.
Was he in the general tonight?
Yeah.
Was he there all night?
Well, wait a minute now. Pretty busy night. He came in a little after 9 o'clock, I think it was. About 9 o'clock, yeah.
He was there all night then?
Yeah, he was there, well, let's see now. The fights, he was watching the fights. He was there till about 10:45, I think. Anyway.
Who was he with, Whitey?
I had a couple of pals of his.
Who are they?
Oh, I don't know. Their last name's Tom and Bud something. He's always with them.
What time did Joe come in there, did you say?
Well, I think it was around 9 o'clock.
Might have been 10 o'clock?
Oh, no. He was in at 10 o'clock.
Was he there at 7:30?
No, he wasn't there at 7:30.
Did you miss him any time at all between 9 and 10 o'clock?
Between 9 and 10?
Yeah. Did you miss him?
No.
You took a bet off him.
No, he was there. He was drinking all the time.
He said he was there since about 7:30. All evening and all night.
No,
somebody's lying here, Whitey. Either you or him. Now,
no, I remember. Listen, I know Joe very well.
What about his two pals, Whitey? Did they leave the place at all tonight?
No, the two pals were there. They were there all the time.
They came in with
them? Wait a minute. I tell you one thing. The phone rang, and I picked it up, and the call was for Joe. But this was about 10:30, I think. So I called Joe, and Joe went up the phone. I forgot about it. I was busy, like I said, you know. And suddenly Joe comes running up the bar and says, "I gotta go."
What time was that?
Well, this was about right after the fight.
Was this male or female voice?
You mean the guy that called? It was a male voice.
Male voice.
Yeah.
And he called, and then Joe said he had to leave right away?
Yeah, he said something about, he says, I got to go up to Ellie's, I think it was.
What time was that about?
I think it was about 10:45. It was right after the fights were over. Yeah.
Oh, we don't need a lineup for this. Bring Joe in and make sure he identifies him. Dick, go out and bring Joe in. Is this the fella here?
Yeah.
Hi, Whitey.
Hi, Joe.
Hey, Joe.
Yeah.
You said that you were in the bar all night.
Yeah.
Until the time you come home, the detectives met you at your door.
Yeah.
What are you lying about?
Well, I was there.
Whitey, stop. Whitey said you weren't there. He said you left there.
What?
Who's Ellie?
I don't know no Ellie.
Well, you got a phone call and you left the place all excited.
Well, I wasn't excited. I got a phone call at Whitey's place, you see? Now, here's the way it works. Like I told you before, I take a little book in there, see?
Listen, Joe.
No, that's the truth. Book. That's true.
You want to hold a bag for everybody, hold it. Because you're gonna hold it unless you tell us who you loan your car to or if somebody else uses your
car. Joe would rather talk to us with Whitey outside. You wait outside a while, Whitey.
Okay.
Go on out with him, Dick. Huh?
Very good. Good luck, Joe.
All right, Whitey, thanks.
Are you going to tell us who you loan your car to or not?
I didn't lend it to nobody.
All right, nobody had your car tonight?
No.
You had it.
It was on the street.
Hold it, fellas. Does the car belong to you? There's no mortgage on it or anything else?
No.
It all belongs to you?
Yeah.
Does everything in the car belong to you? That stuff in the back, on the trunk and all like
everything,
that? Everything belongs to you, huh?
Yeah.
Is that right?
That's right.
All right, well, how about the gun under the seat?
I don't know nothing about no gun.
Now, you fellas heard him say everything belongs to him. And do you know, with a previous misdemeanor, boy, this is a felony. You're not kidding anybody. You're in.
Well, there's a man dying over there.
All I know is you could check with the Whitey and with Bud. Bud works in the garage on First Avenue.
We'll have somebody check. McCandy, I want to tell you something.
Yeah.
Now, we found this gun in your car, and what we're going to do, we're going to send this gun down to the Ballistic Bureau to have a test made and to see if it conforms with the bullets that were shot into that man tonight. So we're just going to hold you. You are now arrested. You're arrested for 1897 of the penal law, which happens to be a felony. So I want to tell you right now, you're permitted to call somebody or write a letter.
Connie, why don't you get some off yourself and kick in? You haven't got a chance.
I tell you, everything I told you is true.
We've been babying you all day and all night.
I'm not going to
baby you anymore.
I don't want to take no raps for nobody, so...
You're not going to take any raps?
No.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to hear that. Why don't you tell the lieutenant just what happened?
Okay.
All right, let's go.
I got a phone call.
Let him talk.
At Whitey's, you see, from Dunk.
Who, what's Dunk's name?
Dunk Rui.
Dunk Rui?
Yeah, it's like Dewey with an R.
Where does he live?
He lives on 398 East 71st Street. That's Ellie's. That's his girlfriend.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, that's where he called me from Ellie's house.
Let's take this name and address for a while. Check that at the BCI.
Okay.
See if we get anything on him. Go ahead now.
Well, he called me up and he said he had to see me, you see. Yeah. So I told him to come down because I wanted to watch the fight. I didn't want to miss the last round. So he said it was very important I should come to Ellie's house as fast as I could get there. So he was the one who was excited. I wasn't excited.
You're the calm type.
Yeah, you know. I went over to Ellie's house and... I loaned Dunk my car. He didn't tell me what he was going to do with the car.
No, he twisted your arm for you to get it from him.
Well, I lend him the car. He pays
Where's
me a
Dunk
couple
now?
Of bucks. I don't know where he is now. Maybe he's at Ellie's.
At Ellie's house?
Yeah.
What time did you lend him the car?
I don't know when he took it. I gave him the keys.
Where do you generally meet him?
At Whitey's.
At Whitey's?
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah.
But he goes steady with Ellie, huh?
Yeah, I've been up there for a bit.
Does he live with her?
Well, he's there most of the time.
Just a friend.
Let's be discreet, you know.
What's that location again?
398 East 71st.
What apartment?
It's 3E, I think it is. It's on the third floor.
They got a phone over there?
Yeah.
Okay. Say, Dick.
Yes,
Jerry, get right over to this Ellie's house. You may nail that guy right there. In fact, I think we better put him in the boob downstairs and we'll all go over.
Now, 20 minutes later, the detectives are in the hall on the third floor outside of Ellie's flat. Here, as they hope to make the final arrest in the case, Lieutenant Campion gives his instructions.
Yeah, but listen, everybody get your guns out right now. We don't want anybody to get injured.
Yeah.
Special delivery.
Okay. Oh.
Where's Dunk?
Wait a minute.
Don't hide her. There's no sense of hiding. She's not. She's going to be a nice little girl. Listen, Ellie, where's Dunk?
Who?
Oh, you know Dunk who. Now, don't give us that line.
I don't know what you're talking about, really.
You don't,
huh? The place over, Lieutenant.
Yeah, look this joint over.
Give us a good station.
Yeah, give us a good
one. There's nothing here.
We'll find out.
Well,
we're the best moving men in the world.
We're going to scream, too, so just keep it nice
and quiet. Go over there and sit down.
Okay.
Money.
Oh.
It's my money.
How much is that?
A couple hundred dollars.
What is a couple of hundred?
It's my money. It's all I got. It's all my money.
How much?
I don't know, about $200 or $300 or something like that.
Count that out, Jake. I saved it.
Ellie, where's Dunk?
I don't...
Come on, we know he was up here.
Jerry, let her watch him counting his dough, will you? How much is there?
There's $815 here.
$815 isn't a couple.
I don't take it out and count it all the time. I don't keep my money in the bank. I keep it under there.
You know the difference between a couple of $100 and $800?
Look, I'm going to cover the door in case this bum comes in.
Oh, do that by all means. And yell if you need some help there. Let's get back to the money.
Get this money?
It's my money. It's my money. It's all the money I have.
Don't be screaming. I ask you that again.
Okay. What do you do for a living?
I don't do anything right now.
Where did you get this money?
I saved it. I've worked other times. I've been on the
stage.
What kind
of work do you do?
Well, I've been on the stage.
How long ago?
Several years ago. For a little while. And then I've had other jobs.
Well, how do you maintain yourself right now?
Right now, I'm unemployed.
For how long?
Oh, about 6 months or something like that.
6 months and you got 815 fish under the cover there?
You live here alone, Ellie?
Yes, sir, I do.
What's men's clothes doing in the closet?
Your
father's.
No, not my father. Is there somebody left him here? No.
She'll explain. Come on, she'll explain.
You've been arrested before, Ellie?
No.
Never been arrested?
No.
Shh. Okay. Hold us.
Ellie, done.
Yeah, man.
Pick him up, Fred. Pick him up.
Give him a quick fan.
Pick him up, Fred.
What's this, Ellie?
Give him a fresh.
Oh, no, I don't know.
Sit down there.
You didn't know Dunk, huh?
I didn't say I didn't know him. I said I hadn't seen him in a long time, and I hadn't.
Dunk, you better get that new suit out of the closet. Oh, you're going to need it.
We're cops.
I don't know you're cops.
Oh, do you want to be shown?
Well, sure, I want to be shown.
What do you work at?
Bum, you will show you.
What do you work at?
I don't work. I'm sick.
Are you? You'll be sicker when this is over. How long do you know the Jane here?
How long do I know you? A couple years.
A couple years.
Do you live here?
Well, I don't know what you want. What do you want with me?
I have your clothes in the closet.
They're his clothes. Yeah,
did you leave any money with her? You left an envelope with her, didn't you? Some dough?
She said you
how
did.
Much was
hey,
she...
Shut up.
You keep quiet.
How much did you leave with her?
Look, I want a lawyer. I don't get a lawyer.
You get a lawyer. How much did you leave with her? How much money?
She said
no,
you
I did. All right, I left her some money.
She said
know.
You left $800. Is that right?
I didn't leave. No.
How
I
much
didn't
did
leave
you?
No.
You didn't count it.
I didn't leave any $800. Help me.
What are you going to do?
You got a
charge or
something?
Where am I charged?
We're going to give you 48. Did you ever hear about a 48?
I don't know what it is, no.
Well, we make out a short affidavit down in court, see? And it's a 48. And if we can't find anything on you, in 48 hours, we give you another 48. And we keep giving you 48s.
Until you get wise to
it.
Kind of
come on.
I did nothing.
That's the right
thing.
All right, get them up. We'll take them down the house.
Wait till I see that Joe. I'll tell him.
Come on, keep going, Dunk.
Next time, I'll borrow somebody else's car.
And that was Cops and Robbers. With real cops and not-so-real robbers. They were actors, and I'm sure you will agree, very good actors. Playing for the most part without a script, knowing only the backgrounds and motivations of their characters. John Sylvester was Dunk, Elspeth Eric was Ellie, Larry Haynes played Joe, and Ken Lynch was the bartender. The CBS Radio Workshop is grateful to Lieutenant Dan Campion and Detectives Richard Jacobson, Howard Clancy, and Jerry Heaney for helping us try to prove a point. I hope we did.
You have been listening to Cops and Robbers on the CBS Radio Workshop. Cops and Robbers was conceived and directed by Stanley Niss, who also acted as your narrator. All names were fictitious except those of our detectives, who are all retired members of the Detective Division, Police Department, City of New York. This is Art Hannis inviting you to listen next week when the CBS Radio Workshop will present The Legend of Jimmy Blue Eyes, a narrative poem set to music by Ray Noble, the story of a jazz trumpeter who sells his soul to the devil. The CBS Radio Workshop is produced in New York by Paul Roberts.
Another brilliant concert by the New York Philharmonic Symphony comes to you over most of these same stations on Sunday as Guido Cantelli returns to conduct an exciting program featuring the Beethoven Concerto No. 4 in G Major with the distinguished German pianist William Backhaus as soloist. Stay tuned for 5 minutes of CBS News to be followed on most of these same stations by the Jack Carson Show. Tonight, the CBS Radio Workshop was transcribed. This is the CBS Radio Network.
The CBS Radio Workshop, on Tuned to Yesterday from March 16, 1956 on CBS. Stanley Niss was the narrator, director, writer, and received the Conceiver credit for that broadcast. He was mostly known in radio for being one of the head writers of the Gangbusters series in the 40s, and in the mid-1950s wrote and directed 21st Precinct, which at the time rivaled Dragnet. You're listening to An Hour of Crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. And now time for Suspense with a Story for Old Time's Sake by E. Jack Newman. This from December 14, 1958 on CBS.
Suspense. And the producer of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, the master of mystery and adventure, William N. Robeson.
Murder will out, they say. And you can't keep a good man down, they say. But what pithy piece of folk wisdom covers the criminal who is a good man? That's what our story is about. A good man with a past. A criminal who returns to a reasonable facsimile of the scene of his crime. Listen. Listen then as John Lund stars in For Old Time's Sake.
And now, For Old Time's Sake, starring John Lund. A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Now, Mr. Winterfield, if you'll sign above your wife's signature, the house is yours. It'll be a day or two before the escrow will be... Mr. Winterfield?
Bert, Mr. Nelson's speaking to you.
I'm sorry. Just signed here.
Bert, you're acting so strange. What's the matter?
Nothing, Helen, nothing at all. We don't see you nearly enough, Mr. Winterfield, considering you're one of our prominent businessmen.
I don't think he likes banks.
I certainly hope that isn't the case. That was the case. I don't like banks. They make me nervous. I suppose because I helped stick up a few years ago when I was only a kid. Oh, I served my time, but I still don't like banks. I don't suppose I've been in the First National a dozen times in the 15 years I've lived in Madison City. But I had to be there now when this nightmare began.
All right, folks, this is a stick-up!
The bank was being robbed. It was so familiar, like watching an old movie, that I kept waiting for Pinky to go into action. Waiting for Pinky to give the orders.
All right, don't move back into the vault. Go on, be quick about it.
And there it was. It was Pinky's voice, crowding in on me, out of the past, shouting at me.
You heard me, buddy. Get those hands up and turn around. I said, get those hands up. Now, turn around.
Well, what do you know?
The rest of you people move back. Go on, into the vault. Not you. You stay.
What do you want with him?
Who's she?
My wife.
Tell her to get into the vault.
Go on, Helen.
What does he want, Bert?
Please go, Helen.
Lady, I told you to get...
He means it, honey. Go on.
Right.
Well, Bert, just like old times, isn't it? Cat got your tongue? Here, grab the sack. Must be your turn to take up the collection. You still remember how it's done, don't you?
I was just a kid. I've done my time.
Does your wife know?
No, I never told her.
Does anyone in this burg know?
No.
Not even the cops?
No, no one.
What do you do for a living?
I own a hardware store.
And nobody knows that you're an ex-con?
Nobody.
Then it wouldn't do you any good if people found out. Would it, Bert?
No, it wouldn't.
Come on, then. Hold that sack open. Why?
Look, Pinky, I don't want to get mixed up in this. I've gone straight.
I know, but you don't mind helping a pal for old time's sake, do you, pal? Now then, next cage.
Leave me out of it.
You want I should kill you?
Well, what am I going to tell him,
Anthony? Nothing. Don't tell nobody nothing. You don't talk, I don't talk, see? But I'll give you a break. I'll make it look good. Hand over your wallet.
Okay.
There. Now you can say you was robbed, too. Man, you're loaded. You must not trust banks. Hey, these your kids?
Yeah.
Where are you?
My wife and I dropped them off at the show.
I'll bet you got big plans for these girls.
Sure I have.
In case you can't keep quiet for old time's sake, just remember these kids. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
Yeah. Where do you... Never mind, here it is. Albert Winterfield, 915 South Maple Street. I'll remember your address, Bert. 915 South Maple. If I happen to read about myself on page one of the morning paper, I'll be dropping in on you. Not next week, maybe. Or even next month. But I'll be back.
Don't worry.
I should worry? They're your kids, Bert.
I'm aware of that. Here's your sack.
You got all of it?
Yeah.
Okay, just a minute. All clear?
All clear.
Everybody tied up?
Yeah.
Turn around, Bert. I can't waste time tying you up.
Yeah, Pinky, I remember your style.
For old time's sake, pal. Come on, boys. Let's get out of here.
Friends, this is Jimmy Wallington. You know, many great men have attained the highest office in our land, the presidency of the United States. Can you guess the name of this man? He was born in 1767 and began his military career at the age of 13. His distinguished victories included campaigns against the Creek and Seminole tribes during the Indian Wars and the Battle of New Orleans against the British in 1815. In his political life, this man served as United States Senator and as governor of the Florida Territory. In his first campaign for the presidency, he was unsuccessful. But in 1828, he won the election and served for two terms. Well, you should have his name by now, but in case you don't, here's one important clue. He brought new attention to national politics during the first year of his administration
by discharging nearly 700 office holders, as against only 74 removals by all the preceding presidents. Yes, he was Andrew Jackson, 7th President of the United States. His life is part of your American heritage.
And now, starring John Lund, Act 2 of For Old Time's Sake.
I woke up in the emergency hospital at police headquarters with a couple of stitches in my head. The doctor told my wife she could take me home, but first there was a Lieutenant Williams from the robbery squad to get around.
You feel well enough to answer a few questions, Mr. Winterfield?
No, I don't.
Won't take long.
Some other time, huh?
I'm afraid it's got to be now. Can you think of any reason why you were singled out to assist in the robbery?
Well, no, I was forced to do it at gunpoint.
What did you two talk about?
Well, nothing.
You didn't talk?
No.
You didn't say anything to one another?
I told you we didn't.
That isn't what you...
You started to say something, Mrs. Winterfield? What was it, Mrs. Winterfield?
Nothing. Nothing.
Mrs. Winterfield, a few moments ago you told me that you saw your husband talking to the gun. Now, isn't that right?
Well, he might have said something. Yeah, in fact, he did. I remember now. He said,
What did he say?
Well, he... He said he was going to kill me if I tried anything. Kept saying that over and over.
You better sit down, Mr. Winterfield. We might be here for some time.
Now, look. I'm not going to play games with you, copper.
Bert.
I've had enough of it, Helen. Now, unless you intend to book me, I'm going home.
I'm not going to book you. And you know it. But I can't help feeling that you're covering up something.
I don't care what you think. Am I free to go?
Yeah. But you know, Mr. Winterfield, this is going to trouble me. It's going to trouble me until I find out what it's about.
Be my guest. Helen, you coming?
I guess so.
Well, come on, let's go.
I'll see you later, Mr. Winterfield.
Bert, I'm waiting.
Waiting for what?
You haven't opened your mouth since we left the hospital.
There isn't anything to talk about.
There isn't anything to talk about. I should say there's a great deal to talk about.
Get off my back, Helen.
Bert, what is this? You never used that tone of voice to me before.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Bert, listen to me. If you're in trouble, I want to know about it. I want to help you.
Nobody can help me.
Bert, remember that promise we made when we were married?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yes, you do. We promised we'd always tell each other the truth. We were awfully solemn about it, and I suppose maybe a little silly. But darling, I've kept that promise. And I believe you have, too, up until now.
I never kept it, Helen. Not from the moment I made it.
Bert.
I'm sorry, dear. I loved you so much. I wanted you. I needed you so badly. I was ready to promise anything.
Yes?
I'm an ex-convict, Helen.
Oh, Bert, no.
Yeah. Don't you see, I couldn't tell you. You wouldn't have married me.
Yes, I would, Bert. That wouldn't have made any difference. It doesn't make any difference now.
You sure?
I'm positive. Then you knew that bank robber.
Yeah.
Why didn't you tell the lieutenant?
Why should I?
It's your duty as a citizen.
Oh, is it?
Of course it is. Now you're guilty of withholding information from the police.
I can't rat, Helen.
Rat? Is this man a friend of yours?
No, not exactly. I used to work with him.
Work? You mean you robbed banks with him?
Yes.
Are you wanted for anything now?
Oh, no, Helen, no. That was a long time ago. I got caught. I went to prison. I'm clean.
Oh, it frightens me to hear you talk like that. Clean, rat, copper. I don't like it, Bert. Let's go back and tell the lieutenant.
I can't, Helen.
You can't pretend this never happened.
Well, let me worry about that, huh?
I'm not going to do it. Pull over at that gas station.
Why?
Pull over, Bert. Stop the car.
Oh, why, I said.
I want you to call the lieutenant, Bert.
I'm not going
to
do it. I can't.
Bert,
I want you to prove to me that the past is really over with. I have to know that. Please, Bert, call the lieutenant.
I can't do it, Helen.
Why?
I have reason.
All right, then. I will.
Helen, don't, Helen.
Police department, please.
Helen, I told you, you can't do this.
Let go of that phone.
Helen, listen to me. Do you want to get the kids murdered?
What did you say?
I said, do you want to get the kids murdered?
You're just trying to scare me, aren't you, Bert?
Oh, no, Helen, I'm serious.
He wouldn't. Would he?
He would.
Can I still trust you, Bert? This hasn't... You wouldn't say this to...
I'll leave that up to you. I'll be waiting in the car.
Many heroes were born in the Korean War. One of them was Major General William F. Dean, Infantry, U.S. Army. General Dean was captured in August 1950. A month previous, he had become separated from his party while going to the aid of a wounded man. He wandered for 35 days, dazed and hungry, begging for food at farmhouses. Finally, he was betrayed by a South Korean who led him into ambush. As a prisoner of war, he was subjected to relentless interrogation. 32 hours, 44 hours, 68 hours at a stretch. Repeatedly, he refused to talk and finally was ordered to put his refusal in writing. Perhaps, without really knowing, General Dean was helping to write Article 5 of the U.S. Fighting Man's Code of Conduct. When questioned, should I become a prisoner of war, I am bound to give only name, rank, service number, and date of birth. I will evade answering further questions to the utmost of my ability. I will make no oral or written statements disloyal to my country and its allies or harmful to their cause.
And now, starring John Lund, Act 3 of For Old Time's Sake.
Well, do you feel better now that you've done your duty as a citizen and taxpayer?
The lieutenant wasn't in.
Oh, good. That gives us a little time.
For what?
To use our heads. Helen, I don't have to tell the police anything. I'm not guilty of anything. Nobody but you knows that I serve time.
That bank robber does.
Oh, he's taken it on the lam by now. And he won't be back unless... And get this, Helen. Unless I go to the police. I know him. If I talk, he'll get me or you or the kids. Now, don't you see? The only sensible thing is to forget about it.
Yes, Bert, whatever you say.
Well, don't you see?
I don't know, Bert. This is the first time I've had anything to do with criminals. I guess I'll have to depend on your wider experience.
What time will the kids be out of the show?
I don't know. They'll phone.
Oh, good. Give me time for a drink. I need one. What's for dinner?
I haven't the slightest idea.
Oh, come on, darling.
I'm sorry, Bert. This is one day when dinner is not uppermost on my mind.
All right, then. When the kids call, we'll both pick them up and we'll all eat out. How would you like that?
Whatever you say, Bert.
Hiya, pal.
What are you doing here?
Well, pal, we had a little trouble getting out of town. They got Bugsy, and I got one of the cops. We're a little hot, so I thought how nice it is to have an old pal in town. Aren't you going to introduce me to the little woman?
Get out of here.
I like it here. I want to get acquainted with your family, Bert. Where are the kids?
Why, they...
Oh, that's right. You said they were at the show. Be home soon?
I don't know.
Unless you leave this minute, I'm going to call the police.
Get away from that phone.
Bert, he's got a gun.
Sure I got a gun. And it shoots. Real bullets. Now sit down and shut up. Don't answer it.
But it might be the kids.
Oh, yeah, the kids. And they'd think something was wrong if Mommy and Daddy weren't home. Okay, go ahead and answer it, Bert. Tell them to get on the bus and come home.
No, Bert, don't let them come here. Tell them to go to the grandmother's. I don't want them here with this hoodlum.
Oh, you shouldn't have said that, doll. But just to show you what a nice guy I am, I'm going to let you talk to the kids. Go on, answer the phone.
Don't do anything foolish, Helen.
You better tell those little kiddies to get on a bus and go home. Or they ain't going to have no mama.
Please, Helen.
Hello? Oh, hello, honey. No, Daddy won't be able to pick you up. We want you and Cindy to take a bus and go to Grandmother.
Are you...
Remember, Grandmother!
All right, doll, I want you.
Wait, Pinky. You're going to need us.
I'll still have you.
No, no, listen to me a minute. I can pick up the kids at the bus stop.
Don't do it, Bert!
One more word out of that woman and I'll kill them both. I'll kill you right now.
Let me handle it, Helen.
Lady, you got anything more to say? Come on. Just one word. Any word.
Okay. Now, don't you open your mouth again. All right, Bert, go get the kids. No tricks. Believe me, it would be a pleasure to kill this woman of yours. If one lousy cop shows up, she's dead. I'll beat it.
May I pose a problem to you? Put yourself down in a town, an isolated town, say in the wilds of northern Canada or in the middle of the Brazilian jungle. Now, in your town, you have four doctors. But in two other villages where you do business and where you have relatives, there are no doctors. And every once in a while, epidemics arise in these villages, killing off relatives you love and friends you've learned to love. What would you do about it? Would you sit idly by? Would you shrug your shoulders and say, it's their village, let them worry about it? Or would you feel that it is the responsibility of your town and your town's doctors to educate the people of the villages and to look after their health? If it were left up to you, wouldn't you do your best to form some organization that would take steps to save the people of these villages? Of course you would. It would be the only humane thing to do. That is what the World Health Organization is trying to do throughout the world. It is an agency of the United Nations, which is man's best hope for the world's health, peace, and justice.
And now, starring John Lund, Act 4 of For Old Time's Sake.
I left the house not knowing what to do. It wouldn't make any difference to Pinky how many people he killed. If I picked up the kids, there was a good chance they'd get it too. But if I didn't, Helen would get it for sure. I was walking to my car when a squad car pulled up. The two cops in front. Lieutenant Williams was one of them.
Going somewhere, Mr. Winterfield?
What do you want?
I want to talk to your wife. The office said she tried to call me.
She hasn't anything to say to you?
Well, as long as I'm here, I might as well hear it from her.
You got a search warrant?
I don't need a warrant to ring doorbell.
You're not going in, Lieutenant.
But go with that door.
Look, don't, Lieutenant. You'll kill her. Who? The guy from the bank. He's in there with my wife.
Get that on the radio, Joe. Tell the boys to close in. What if he'll get out of the way?
Give me a break, Lieutenant.
You've had all the breaks you'll get from me, mister.
For my wife's sake, listen to me.
What's on your mind?
Give me a gun.
Give you a gun? Are you crazy?
I'm the only one who'll get close enough to save her.
Even so, I can't give you a gun. How do I know you're not in this up to your ears?
Believe me, I'm not mixed up in the robbery. Sure, I'm an ex-con, and I know the guy. We work together. But I'm not mixed up in this one. Please, Lieutenant, for my wife's sake.
You sure he'll kill her? It might be bluff.
Oh, no, Lieutenant. I know this man.
All right, Winterfield. I'll take a chance on you. I hope I won't live to regret it.
You won't, Lieutenant.
Oh, those idiots. Joe, tell them to shut off the sirens.
Probably did it.
I'm sorry, Winterfield.
Give me the gun, Lieutenant.
The guy can hear the siren. He's going to know that something's up.
I got to take that chance. Give me the gun.
Okay, Winterfield. Here you are. Good luck.
Get away, Bert. He's going to kill you.
Can you hear me, Bert?
I can hear you, Pinky.
Don't come in, Bert.
Shall I kill a bird or are you coming in?
I'm coming in, Pinky. Okay, drop the gun.
Are you? Dirty rat.
Are you all right, Bert?
Yeah, I'm all right.
Is he dead?
Are you two okay?
Yeah. But Pinky's dead, Lieutenant. I had to kill him.
Yes?
He's dead, all right. I guess a lot of things died with him.
Well, that's up to you, Lieutenant.
Well, why don't you come in and tell me the whole story one of these days?
Right. I'll be glad to. I got nothing to hide now, have I, Helen?
Nothing, darling.
Well, then, let's go find those kids of ours.
Suspense, in which John Lund starred in William N. Robeson's production of For Old Time's Sake, written by Gordon Christian. Supporting John Lund in For Old Time's Sake were Virginia Gregg, Bill Quinn, and Joe DeSantis. Listen. Listen again next week when we return with another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. Suspense has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
Suspense on Tuned to Yesterday from December 14, 1958 on CBS. And so closes this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. Thanks for listening.